Hi, this is Trevor Ray Sloan, author of Doing Apologetics Without the Need for Apology, secretary on the executive board of the International Society of Christian Apologetics, founder and owner of ApologeticsOnlineRadio.com, and host of Think It Through. All right, we're here on Think It Through with Matt Coombe, vice president of the Institute of Biblical Defense and adjunct professor at Liberty University. How are you doing today, Matt?
Hello, my good friend. I'm doing quite well.
Good, good, good. You sound perky. Drinking some coffee there, maybe?
Yeah, dude. I'm not going to get on the radio without having a... This is a four-shot espresso I've got right now.
Very nice, very nice.
It's Seattle, man. We all drink coffee all the time.
So. There you go, there you go. All right, well, we're going to be talking about how Christians should view superheroes and modern superheroes in today's society. You ready?
Oh, yeah, let's do this.
All right, first question, how would you define a superhero?
Well, it's really interesting because I actually utilize Superman when I explain what supernatural or miracles or a supernatural phenomenon looks like. You know, we have natural phenomenon, you know, things that occur on a regular basis, you know, gravity, wind blowing, all these things occur naturally. Supernatural is an addition to the natural.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, we have Nintendo, and then we have Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the difference between Nintendo and Super Nintendo? Well, it's a lot of the same characters, a lot of the same video games, but there is an added component that brings it to a fuller degree. So when I explain the supernatural like that, I don't think of it as... It's almost like this is the way it is meant to be. This is the way how things are meant to function.
Hmm.
Like, for example, in C.S. Lewis's Out of the Silent Planets, his space trilogy,
mm-hmm.
he notes that there was these creatures that could pass through physical objects. And the person viewing this says, how is it that these beings, these are actual beings, can pass through objects? And I forget who it was that explained it, but the person explained that the beings are so real, they have such a high level of reality, that for them to pass through things that we consider physical would be like us passing through fog.
Hmm.
So they had like this higher level of reality. That's what I like to consider to be the difference between natural and supernatural. It's not necessarily better or worse, but it is... When we move into the realm of supernatural, we're getting closer to God because he is a supernatural being compared to us. So bringing this back to comic book characters, I think, what is the difference between man and Superman? Well, he has all of the similar characteristics of man, but none of the inherent flaws.
Hmm.
While man is limited to a much greater degree than in, you know, speed, strength, Superman is unlimited. So I would say a superhero would be, as in the traditional sense of how it should be considered,
mm-hmm.
a superhero is something or someone that possesses this ability, either innate or trained, to transcend to a greater degree what the intent of man is. Now, the intent of man is to be good. You know, so God has created us for good works.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between man and Superman is Superman can do really, really great works. That makes sense. So basically what I would say is a superhero. superhero as somebody that, that has this, however, received these special abilities, but it's an enhanced or a fuller realization of what man is meant to do. Like, for example, in Spider-Man 2, you have Aunt May is talking to Peter Parker, and she doesn't know that he's Spider-Man, but she says, you know, there's a hero in all of us. I said, we need heroes. We need them to help us to keep on fighting, to do what, to continue to do what we know is right. Mm-hmm. So I would say then, yeah, a hero is someone that fulfills the functions of the intent, the good intent of man, but does it to a greater degree.
Okay.
Probably the longest definition.
Hey, fair enough. That's perfectly acceptable. That's a good definition. All right. How? What are some positive characteristics of many modern superheroes that people tend to look up to? You think?
Well, I really wanted to spend some time talking about Superman.
Okay.
I don't think he's a very good comic book hero. He's very difficult to write for. But he's a great superhero. I mean, the mythos around him is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
For example, just, you know, we talked about last time. I'll just mention this really briefly. When I did my lecture, we talked about hero myth and video games before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same thing, the same aspects of hero myth can also be applied to comic book heroes or to superheroes. Real quick, what hero myth is a set of universal characteristics or themes incumbent to legends, literature, fables, folklore, cinema, saga, video games, and comic books. There's a quotation I shared last time I thought was really brilliant. It's by Dr. Lowry. He says, in sum, all of mankind's religious and philosophical yearnings partake in, have an innate share in, the truth of the incarnation, the particularity of Christianity, namely, that it is the true religion. It is no longer scandalous, but a beautiful mystery that extends universally, seeing reality whole. As someone once said to me, even if this viewpoint is not true, it is certainly beautiful. I think it is beautiful and true. Basically, what he's saying is, we see these truths of Christianity everywhere. I mean, we cannot escape it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if I talked about this last time. I know it wasn't in my notes, but since I go off my notes so much, I could have brought it up last time. But look at, like, for example, take a movie like The Lion King. The Lion King was set out as to advocate Eastern mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
It's set in Africa. You have the guru monkey that, you know, is like this practitioner of like occultic practices and all these things. But yet, if you were to go through and list the Western Christian themes versus the Eastern religious mysticism themes, there's so many more Christian themes because it is simply unavoidable. If you want to tell the best possible story and you want it to be intriguing and powerful, it has to include these universal themes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, look what Lion King has. You have we'll talk a little bit, or I'll go over what the hero myth cycle is, but you have the departure of the son, or you have the son and the father. You have the departure of the son. You have the supernatural communication with the son and the father. You have the return of the son to triumph over evil.
Mm-hmm.
All those things are Christian themes. So even in a movie that was set out to be quote unquote anti-Christian, it still results in a very Christian theme, and it's simply because you cannot avoid it. You know, the best possible story, it will include these things.
Hmm.
You know, I was talking with a friend of mine, and he was going through a lot of spiritual doubt, and he says, you know, I just don't understand. He was specifically talking about Job, and he was like, I don't understand how God could, you know, leave Job and then come back to him. And I said, that just sounds, you know, it just sounds so fake, and it just sounds so dry. And he was like, and so I stopped him. I was like, you know what, let's just talk about something else. And he's like, fine. I was like, hey, what's your favorite love story in a movie? He's like, probably the Jenny and Forrest Gump. I was like, why do you like that story? And he's like, well, you know, it's like they had this great relationship at the beginning, and they grew together, and then some stuff happened, and she went away, and when they were gone, they were both sad that they were apart, and then at the end, they ended up getting back together and reconciling. I was like, wow, yeah, that is a really great love story. You should read Job again. and he just sat there, and he goes, dang. So these universal themes are everywhere. You know, even you do see types of, you don't see bodily resurrections really in literature before Christ, but you do see certain themes of resurrection, such as, you know, the changings of the season and stuff like that. So all these things, all these great scandalous, as Lowry says, these scandalous aspects of reality are everywhere, and yet they still continually point directly to the scriptures. So back to Superman, real quick, a couple of similarities between Jesus and Superman. Both had royal parents, you know, or some type of royal or high-ranking parents, at least you could say for Superman. But you have the sending of the Son from the Father, both of them. You have Jor-El sends Kal-El, or Superman, to Earth. The child faces danger immediately upon arriving to Earth. You know, Jesus was born, and he immediately, you know, he had to flee for his life. You know, flight to Egypt. Same thing, you know. Superman arrives on Earth, and you know he's a naked baby in a field. You know, it's probably not a good place for babies to hang out.
Yeah.
Both were taken in by a new father who's not of their blood. And I thought it was really interesting. I was trying to find some new stuff to talk about this, and I realized that it's really interesting because the Kents, you know, Clark Kent, Superman's adoptive parents, were farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I was thinking about, oh wait, Jesus was met by shepherds, in a field or on a farm. So I thought that was really cool. I was like, oh wow. Farmers everywhere. So those are some of the similarities that we see between them. Real quick, I don't want to spend too much time on this just because I covered it last time. So I'm just going to talk about the hero myth cycle as it applies to Superman.
Okay.
If you want to go back, and if someone's interested in the other one, in the other aspects, I explain about how Jesus fulfills this hero myth. But, you know, we have there's six parts of this hero cycle. It's departure, doubt, refusal, empowerment, conquest, and return. So the first part is departure. After his earthly father dies, Superman seeks out the Fortress of Solitude. That's where he learns about his alien heritage. So you have the departure, then the doubt. He doesn't really know where he fits in at first. He,
mm-hmm.
you know, he has a, I love the Marlon Brando playing the Superman's father. It's just such a brilliant, brilliant role. It was so small, and yet it was so powerful. But Superman doesn't know where he fits in. Next step, you have the refusal. At first, he refuses his role. He's afraid to that he could possibly cause greater damage. You know, in the first Batman movie, not the Michael Keaton one, but the redone Christopher Nolan ones, you know, at the end of it, you have the teaser about how the Joker shows up. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was Commissioner Gordon goes to Batman. He's like, you know, what I worry about is I worry about escalation. You know, you show up with a gun, so they show up with a bigger gun. So you show up with a bulletproof vest, and then they show up with armor-piercing bullets.
And when
Batman arrived on the scene, that almost sent this thing out where there needs to be this kind of yang to his yin. There needs to be some type of anti-hero that could respond to somebody like Batman.
Yeah.
You know, Commissioner Gordon says, this is what I'm afraid of. Well, that's kind of what Superman was afraid of, too. He's like, yeah, I can go out and do greater good, but in doing the greater good, I'm also going to be putting this bullseye on my friends and my family and all this stuff like that. So, he has a refusal at first. He receives the empowerment. Usually in hero myth, it's like someone receives a sword. That's probably the most common theme. We talked about last time, Legend of Zelda, Link, he gets a Master Sword. That's his empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
But for Superman, you know, he was given his birth clothes, his outfit that he was wrapped in as a child, and he went to Earth in. You know, actually... Have you seen the movie Kill Bill?
No.
I know, it's like not a movie I'd recommend, but it's just cause it's a little violent. But
I've seen parts of it.
Yeah, it's good. I really like Tarantino. But I thought his evaluation about Superman in that movie, specifically in part two, was brilliant. And one of the things he says is, you know, Superman is set apart from all other superheroes because when he transforms, he doesn't transform into an everyday person into Superman. He actually has to transform from Superman into an everyday person.
Hmm.
Like, for example, you know, the bat signal goes up and Batman's like, all right, I gotta go. So he goes to the bat cave, puts on his bat suit, puts on, you know,
that's a good point.
Same thing with Spider-Man. You know, Spider-Man's like, oh, it's trouble. Okay, I'm going to take off my suit. I got my spider suit on. Superman wakes up in the morning, and he's Superman.
Mm-hmm.
When he puts on his clothes, when he puts on his to go to work, he's putting on a costume that is trying to make him look like the rest of humanity. And this also goes back to what the definition of a superhero is look at what Superman's take on humanity is. Look at the person that he tries to turn into in order to blend in. It's someone who is clumsy, fearful, won't stand up, won't make a fuss. And that's how he views humanity. So it's a very, very interesting dynamic that Tarantino brings up there. But anyways, so his empowerment was receiving his suit. And that was the thing that he was wrapped in as a child. And then also his words. I got the Marlon Brando quotation here. It's I didn't Google it. I just said it from memory. I'm pretty sure it's accurate. But it says, the people of Earth, he's talking to his son, are good if they wish to be. They only lack the light to show them the way. For this reason, I am sending them you, my only son. And I love the Christology.
Interesting, yeah.
I love the Christology. You know, even, did you ever watch the Smallville TV show?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, the first, like, three seasons were great, and then it just got horrible. It was like...
That's about when I stopped watching it, too, yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people slammed or said it had anti-Christian themes because in the pilot, they had Clark, it was a farm thing where they made a scarecrow out of a person.
Oh.
But the way they had him up there, he was like it was Jesus on the cross.
Mm.
And people were saying, you know, oh, it's heretical. You know what? I loved it. I said, hey, let's do everything we can to point towards Christ.
Yeah.
And him on the cross. So I like that. And then the last two, you have the conquest and then the return. You know, the conquest, you know, depending on which Superman mythos you're referring to, you know, you have his battle with Doomsday is pretty epic. You know, Superman 2, and in the comic books you have Zod. He, after receiving this empowerment, this encouragement, he does a conquest, and then he returns. So I would say, to answer your question then, what is the good that we see in comic books is it continually, if a comic book is going to tell the best possible story, it will either directly or indirectly point to the cross.
Hmm.
Because that is the best way to tell a story that has the most entertaining is that it has these aspects of it.
Yeah, it points to redemption.
Exactly.
That makes perfect sense. Everybody likes that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's good too. Good stuff. All right. What are some more negative characteristics of some modern superheroes?
Actually, before we went to negative, I want to talk about one other positive aspect.
Okay.
I made a couple subpoints of how I utilize comics to glorify God.
Okay.
Number one, I use a lot of comic book illustrations when I'm preaching. I love the symbolism, and it's just powerful. It's just such a unique art form. And the last time I spoke at Dr. Fernandez's school, that was the last time, I don't know, I shared a Captain America quotation. And it was such a powerful quotation, and he talks about how, you know, if the whole world is pushing you and telling you to move, and what you're standing for is true and good, then you say to the whole world, no, you move. And I remember it was so powerful, and like a lot of kids started clapping when they heard that. So the illustrations are definitely there.
Cool.
In a lot of comic books. Second thing is, Bonaventure, the medieval philosopher, you know, he did not find an argument for the existence of God that he didn't like. You know, he used everything. So he would just all this stuff, he would just kind of throw it up against the wall and sees what sticks. I'm kind of like that in that I can find encouragement from anything. I remember this one time I was preaching. I was preaching a week-long thing at a camp. And during this time, I had just this debilitating stomach bacteria, something I dealt with for like 4 or 5 years. It was so bad. And there were times where I just lay on my back just writhing in pain. Mm. And anytime I was exhausted or overly exerted, it would just flare up, and preaching just, you know, wipes me out. You know, like 2 or 3 days of preaching in a row, you know, that's like running a couple of marathons for me.
Yeah.
So it was like 4 days in, and I was just done. And I remember I was like walking to where I was supposed to be preaching, and I just kind of like had to stop, and I took a knee. And I was just praying. I was like, Lord, please, you know, just give me the strength. And it was funny because I immediately flashed to this this manga, which is a Japanese comic book. And it was this samurai who was just he was just beat up and he was bruised and he was stabbed. But he was going and he had to get to this spot. And he had fallen down on one knee. And then I remember he had put his sword in the ground to help him stand himself back up. And it was funny because when I was on my knee, that was like what my mind flashed to.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like Kenshin right here is the show Rurouni Kenshin, and or the manga Rurouni Kenshin. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like Kenshin here. And it was just that little thing, and that was like kind of all it took. And then it got me kind of excited, and then I was like, all right, let's go, let's do this, let's preach.
Cool.
So I can find encouragement anywhere. And then the last thing that how I utilize comic books to glorify God is, it reminds me that you know Jesus is the greatest hero. And you know, it sounds like, almost sounds a little bit cheesy, but I mean, think about this. You have the creator of the universe comes in the form of a man to die on the cross for mankind and to erase sin and death. I mean, that is that puts anything that Superman can move planets. That's nothing compared to being able to redeem all of mankind.
Or to create the planets out of nothing to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then through the creation's own choice of sinning and allowing death to reign over them,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to respond by dying myself so that they can have life. You know, do you ever watch Doctor Who?
No, I don't watch a lot of TV.
Yeah, I don't even have a TV, but I...
You know, I've heard it's a good show.
Oh, it's good. It's super nerdy, so you'd like it. But anyways, it was really interesting because there's this one episode where this woman had this mission, and she had, like, several years to complete it, but her job was she needed to go to like as many continents and countries as she could to tell everyone about how Doctor Who could save the universe. And I kid you not, this was my response when I first saw that. And I'm a little ashamed to say it, but I'm gonna say it anyways. But I was sitting there watching it, and I was like, wow. How cool would that be to go on this mission where you're traveling across the world telling people about this person that can save you?
Sounds kind of like the Great Commission.
And God is like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know, really. So that's funny. Yep.
Like that's supposed to be your life already.
That's funny.
Okay, so I would use that. So, but yeah, let's talk about some problems that we have with comic books. You know, in general, humans, we have three great vices and three great virtues. The great virtues are beauty, truth, and love.
Okay.
The great vices are distraction, destruction, and distortion.
Okay.
You know, Pascal talks about that. You know, it's like that humanity is lined up to head to the slaughterhouse. That's the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like not only are we lined up to go to the slaughterhouse, but we get upset if somebody cuts in front of us too. It's like that little Farside comic. You know, and this one cow goes up in front of everybody else and cuts. And this cow in the back says, hey, no cutting. Basically what Blaise Pascal says is, this is humanity. This mm-hmm. is the human condition. So we seem to be either hell-bent, quite literally,
mm.
That's my thing. You know, I'm not going out, you know, stealing cars or, you know, hooking up with ladies at the bar or something like that. You know, I'm not out doing destructive things.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I'll tell you what, I can get distracted.
Yeah, as can we all.
Yesterday, you know, I was talking with Trevor on my way home from work, and we're talking about our apologetics.
A different Trevor.
What?
A different Trevor, mind you, to my listeners. You were talking to me on the phone yesterday?
Oh, we were texting.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Sorry. And I was like, what?
Sorry. Radio mess up.
But anyways, we were talking about apologetic stuff, and he wanted me to send him a bio thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, no worries. We'll have it done in an hour. So I was driving home. I'm like, man.
6 hours later, I texted you. You're like, I fell asleep.
Like, hey, Matt, were you going to get that bio stuff? I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry. So it's very easy.
Yeah, as it is for all of us, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, distortion.
Hmm.
And distortion is actually kind of a mixture of the two. Mm-hmm. It's a distraction and it's a destruction.
You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He refers to it as Jesus' infallible commentary on the Old Testament law.
Mm.
And he says it's infallible because Jesus wrote it. So, you know, if any time you want to know what somebody meant by something, you know, just ask them. I was in a class with Habermas, with Dr. Habermas.
Mm-hmm.
So embarrassed. It's like one of my first classes I had with him. So here I am with like all these PhD students, smart, and I quote him, and he looks at me and says, "Well, I never said that." And I'm like, "Oh my!" He started explaining it more. He's like, "Oh yeah, I did say that."
Yeah, cool. One of the things, real quick before I forget, one of the things that I noticed while you were talking earlier, one of the differences between Jesus and superheroes, at least of our time, when the superhero dies, all hope is lost.
Oh, that's a really good point.
But I mean, that's literally it. Unless another superhero comes along. They're not coming back. If they die, they die. But with Jesus, he had to die so that hope could reign.
But you even see that. I think it was Tacitus that even mentioned that for a short time.
Oh, yeah, the hope was gone in the eyes of the disciples.
He's seeing this as the people is spread out, you know, running from their lives. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, when Superman dies, the main hope is somebody else has to step up.
Yeah, I mean, the writer of that story is indicating that hope is gone when Superman dies. That's what they want you to think. But when God, the creator of the universe, is planning his story, he knows that Jesus has to die for hope to reign. And that's exact opposite of the mindset of the individuals writing these comics. Yeah. That's kind of my point.
It's interesting, though, because it's like a joke in the comic book world that, you know, nobody stays dead for long.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, everyone comes back. Sometimes they don't even explain it.
Start another series. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a very fascinating point. I know where it's going with those things around the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
The distraction is that, or sorry, the, not distraction, but distortion.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and Jesus had to make himself clear because that his law had been so distorted.
Hmm. So any time where you are distorting something to the point of it makes you worship a created thing rather than the creator, that's bad. I mean, there's two things in Scripture that believers are commanded to flee. Number one is sexual immorality. Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's some, like, lady and she's, wants to get down or something, you don't say, well, let me quote you these scriptures.
You know, like, you get out of there, yeah.
And the other thing is idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
We as Americans, we have a hard time understanding idolatry until you say, well, your iPhone is kind of like your idol.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you not take your iPhone to bed with you at night? Whoa.
Yeah.
Go down there.
Yeah.
Captain Insano. I take my phone with me in the bathroom, idolatry is where you become focused and fixated on anything to a greater degree than the Lord. And actually that actually results in occultic practices and occultic ideas.
Yeah.
Dr. Fernandez, any listeners out there, go on Sermon Audio, look up Institute of Biblical Defense. Dr. Fernandez just put out a 3-part series on dealing with the occult. And it was
awesome.
So brilliant. And me and one of my students listened to the last two of the series last night. And I looked over at my friend and I was like, how could he do a 3-part series on the occult and me still get convicted about it? We were joking about how Dr. Fernandez was so convicted.
Oh, yeah.
But check that out. But he even talks about how, things like comic books, video games, even role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons. Now, I'm not an anti-Dungeons & Dragons guy. I played that. I'm a super nerd. But those are the type of things that can lead to occultic practice.
Yeah, definitely.
So, comic books can be, or superheroes or anything can be very troubling if it results in idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know if it results in idolatry? If you're dreaming about it.
Well, yeah, especially if you're, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Especially if you're, we have this idea in America that entertainment, especially in America, that entertainment is inherently neutral. That it's not even remotely dangerous. But when we entertain ourselves by things like comic book characters or superheroes to relieve stress or to relieve tension in our minds, as opposed to going into prayer or reading our Bible, reading our scriptures, and those types of things, that can also be a way that is occultic in a sense.
Oh, absolutely. That's a fantastic point. In fact, Doc actually talks about this. I think it was in the second or third, but he was talking about education and entertainment.
Mm.
And he was talking to some of his students about it, and one of the gals says, I think we're being educated the most when we're being entertained and we don't realize that we're being educated.
Hmm. Which is sad.
That was, well, very interesting
Yeah, it's interesting from a teaching perspective.
But it's scary, too.
Yeah.
So, and it's just like things that just kind of immediately become so ingrained because we see it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, when was the last time, or can you ever think of any time in which like a homosexual relationship on a TV show or a movie was like a was a bad relationship?
Yeah.
You don't see that.
Yeah.
You know, even to like I if we ever do our you know our if we do our lecture or talk on Christianity and television,
mm-hmm.
we're going to talk about the TV show Glee.
Mm.
And it's really interesting because it was like all these kids in high school were having sex. When the homosexual couple, they were like, "No, we're gonna wait to have sex."
Interesting.
It's like if you look at the statistics, you know. The,
yeah, it's like not even remotely realistic.
They tend to have more casual sex partners.
Mm-hmm, by far.
By far.
Yeah.
Christians were, you know, basically technical virgins,
mm-hmm.
and or just not virgins at all. And the homosexuals were the ones who, you know, were like, well, let's just wait on this. So you have all of these TV shows and movies constantly portraying in a positive light homosexuality. And now again, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to just slam. On homosexuals here. My point is that
Hollywood tends to glorify sin, and it gets ingrained in our minds as the norm. And the norm in our society is the correct, because we thrive off of argumentum ad populum, or appeal to the populace. It's rare.
It is. I mean, even still, I mean, that's, you know, I also have a series on Christianity and movies. But, you know, the priests are always the wackos.
Mm-hmm.
They're the sexual deviants, you know. Again,
well, if you look at, like, what was that movie, Chocolate? Yeah, that was a horrible movie in terms of how it depicted religion, or traditional Western religion. It's very Wiccan oriented, yeah.
The one person in the village that was vivacious and happy and loved life
was the witch.
Was the atheist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the oppressed and the sexually repressed and the boring Christians that all hated their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I look around, the people I know who are the most satisfied, well, I mean, quite honestly, the people I know who are the most satisfied sexually are, I mean, I have friends who, you know, they'll be out with a different woman like every weekend.
Mm.
You know, granted, they're not Christians, but these men that I know that do that, they're not sexually satisfied at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Again, you don't see any of that. You don't see any of that portrayed. So going back to our point is, you know, we're being entertained, and at the same time we're being educated, and that education is saying these things are good and these things are bad, and we're being taught that whether we know it or not.
Yeah, subconscious education is by far the most dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, about that, we got to wrap up here in a minute, but you pretty much answered everything I had to ask. I wanted to point out one of the other things I noticed when you talked about destruction, distraction, and distortion. These are three things that I see in virtually every modern superhero that were not in Jesus at all. You know, modern superheroes tend to win the day by destruction of some sort or another. They tend to be easily distracted from their main purpose, which is to save the world. There's constantly things that are distracting them, and they're having to get back on track. That's often the purpose of the show, is to point out how they got back on track to save the day in the end. And then the distortion, I mean, ultimately they are the distortion of the true and ultimate superhero, which is Christ. Yeah, which is... Yeah. I'm doing what I gotta do. Don't distract me. Yeah. He distorted and distracted with destruction. That's good. Hey, that's a lot of good stuff there, Matt. You got anything else to say before I let you go? I appreciate that, Matt. You as well. All right, you have a good one, Matt. Yep. I appreciate that. You as well. Bye-bye.